All right, beginning now with Esoteric Astrology Adventure, number 112B. And taking the review with Master DK of his particular perspective on esoteric astrology. He says, in no place have I attempted to give any of the mathematics connected with my statements in this series of astrological studies, so you can be sure they exist. These mathematics do exist. And in some cases, they are probably some pretty profound mathematics, more so than the mathematics that we use in astrology simply to calculate the horoscope and the progressions and the directions and so forth. The theme of the Great Mother, mathematics, we can be sure that the point at which to start the Aquarian Age or any age, and perhaps the point at which all ages truly exist or begin, can be determined mathematically. My colleague Nicholas Nilen has some very interesting ideas about the relationship between our galaxy, the Milky Way, and the Andromeda galaxy. He could explain it better than I, but it has a lot to do with what is the beginning point of zero Aries in the larger stellar sense. And I think it's a brilliant conclusion he's come to, realizing the intersection of Andromeda with our ecliptic as the possible starting point of it all. So I refer you to him. It is a group revelation, and his ideas there. He's one of the really pioneering minds, very subtle in his understanding of astrology. He has that fifth ray and also Mercury in Pisces, which gives an intuitive subtlety, penetration into this ancient and great science. So I refer you to him on these matters and on many matters for the subtle charts and other things. Lots of light. He's capable of giving you lots of light on these matters. Certain basic changes in the orientation of the Earth's axis are now taking place. If they're basic, maybe they'll last for a while. Or maybe they are a return after a period of flux. And these will throw much confusion into the computations of astrologers who are using, I suppose, just the normal mathematical methods and are not taking into consideration these reorientations that are occurring of our axis. I don't think we're speaking simply of the gyration of the axis in that top-like motion, which gives us the precession of the equinoxes. Something more than that. I think it has something to do with the actual inclination of the axis, and it's not all about the polarization of the two poles, whether they switch from positive to negative or negative to positive. It's not about that. It is actually about the inclination of our axis, which right now is 23-some degrees, but I believe has not always been so and will not always be so. In his book on, I wish I knew the name of the book, it's Arnold Samson Mackey, and it maybe is 200 years old, and he somehow was a great researcher, and he Blavatsky quotes him. It's part of the Secret Doctrine Source series. And he discusses a time when the inclination of the Earth's axis coincided with its own equator, or with the ecliptic. I'm not sure. But I think with the equator, and in which case there was an entirely... There was a union of the poles with the signs of the zodiac. Well, if with the signs of the zodiac, it would be the ecliptic. with the constellations of the zodiac. And when we look at planets like Venus, it is revolving in exactly the opposite way of the Earth, because its axis is actually pointing downward almost 179 degrees. It's in that phase of the shift of the Earth's axis, which has traveled very, very far from its original position. And we even see with Uranus that it is tilting below the ecliptic. So it does seem as if planets can dramatically change the orientation of their axis, so that there's almost an entire reversal, in fact, an entire reversal. And the ancient priests, the historian Herodotus, the Egyptian priests, told Herodotus that this had occurred some 3.5 times in the history of our Earth and its axis. So I don't know if anything so drastic is occurring at the moment. These things have yet to be revealed. But the inclination of 23 plus degrees, which causes our polar circles, our Arctic Circle and our Antarctic Circle, they will be changing. Some planets, you know, have an inclination of the axis which is virtually vertical. I think Mercury is one of those. Earth has a tilt, and that tilt could become greater or lesser, depending upon the will of our planetary logos. I suppose that's the point. And that planetary logos would be changing the orientation of his tangible planet in space because of the will of the solar logos, and so it would go, each following the will of a greater. So we are really in a period of flux, and it's not just the Aquarian Age and the Piscean Age. It's not just the transition from the equinoctial age of Pisces to that of Aquarius. It's something more. And in this time of flux, then, it's hard to be definite about these things. These changes are proceeding slowly and progressively and according to cosmic law, but which laws, we don't know. Obviously, there is the change we all expect, whereby Polaris will no longer be our pole star because of the top-like gyration of the Earth's axis moving in a way counter both to its rotation and revolution. But this is lawful, and the will proceeds by law, or the law represents the will. Whilst they are in progress, and he doesn't tell us for how long they will be, accuracy of computation and deduction is unattainable, I suppose, by the average astrologer. Maybe if you were a member of the great hierarchical department of astrology, you would know where, at any one point, the Earth's axis is inclining, or to what degree it is inclining. When the orientation and pointed direction of the Earth's pole has been stabilized, because, you know, when we come to the gyration, which has to do with these equinoctial ages, that is a constant gyration, and it never stabilizes in that sense. It may be more or less oriented towards a particular star, but I don't think it speeds up and slows down. I think it's a ongoing steady motion, so we cannot really speak of stabilization when it comes to that gyration. I think, though, if there's a movement towards a particular angle of inclination in the axis, and then a holding at that angle of inclination, we may be able to speak of stabilization. So pointed direction, of course, Polaris is involved at the present time with the idea of pointed direction. Let's just say that our Earth's axis is pretty well pointing in the direction of Polaris, but will not remain so. It's moving on. So Polaris at the present time is a major star of orientation with regard to the entire planet. When the orientation and pointed direction of the Earth's pole has again been stabilized, the new conditioning, mathematical figures, can be again ascertained. And so much that's going on with the changing in climates and the global warming and that sort of thing, it may not be entirely man's fault, although he will contribute to it. There are some chakric changes going on in the Earth. The Earth represents a base of the spine center within the chakric system of the solar logos, and so there's a certain heating up, DK tells us, of the Earth as representing one of the distributors of solar systemic kundalini, and I think Uranus is involved in another planet. There is a kundalinic action occurring, which I think is contributing to global warming on our particular sphere, and also this axial reorientation occurring. Don't know how that affects the climate, but it certainly might. And it's a time of very, very great change. We are passing on this planet through a type of fourth initiation, which is always an initiation of rending, and it does involve the heart center. So if there's an awakening of the soul, the secondary soul of our planet, which is related to the heart center of our planet and related to hierarchy, which in a sense is the heart center of our planet, and its emergence into externalization, all these factors are related. A rending, cross-like initiation, which is detaching us from strict materialism, is allowing us a change of orientation from the third-ray personality of our planet with its materialistic tendencies to its second-ray soul, that second-ray of the soul correlating, the ray correlation is there with the fourth degree. And all of this having to do with some change in solar systemic kundalini, because we know that the kundalini really begins to flow in a very progressive manner at the third degree and will be flowing at the fourth and at the fifth. There will be a union between the base of the spine and the top of the head, so a special union in a way between our planetary system and the sun and Uranus, Uranus representing the top of the head, and our sun also representing that. Big changes are in process, and we, as the Tibetan refers to us, microscopic man, have hardly any idea of what is occurring. He says it's our task to suffer. That is actually, he says something to that effect in a treatise on cosmic fire here on page 384. Says, undergoing our planetary locus is undergoing a kind of crucifixion. Well, may this globe therefore be considered the globe of sorrow and of pain, for through it our planetary locus is undergoing that which the mystic calls the crucifixion. The cells in his body, those cells which he feels, senses, and experiences, that's us, we are the cells, and other life forms, are in this world period rent by pain and suffering, for his is the consciousness at the center of the body, and theirs is the capacity to suffer, which, by the way, is a progressive state which enables us to expand our consciousness. And theirs is the capacity to suffer so that by means of them he may learn the meaning of systemic dispassion, which he does not know yet because he is not yet an initiate, a cosmic initiate of the second degree. See, two kinds of initiation themes are going on here. One which is sevenfold and is more on the planetary level, and another which is on the cosmic level. I don't know how many fold it is, maybe it's sevenfold as well, but it is a cosmic series of initiation. And he's learning, as do approaching second degree initiates, a degree of dispassion. So he's learning the means of a meaning of systemic dispassion, to be dissociated from all forms of material substance, and upon the cross of matter eventually find liberation and the freedom of the spirit, which would be for him a fourth degree, which should be achieved in this solar system. A fourth degree for our planetary logos as well as for our solar logos, and maybe even a fifth degree. But anyway, ours is the capacity to suffer during this period. There are new mathematical figures to be ascertained, and they are already known, of course, by the great ones, especially those in the astrological department of hierarchy. And anything that we say about astrology has been a generality because, as DK says here, there's no true accuracy since ancient Egyptian days. He doesn't just say Egyptian days, he says ancient Egyptian days. And Blavatsky tells us, let's say, that the pyramids are much, much older than we can imagine, 60, 70,000 years old, minimally, maybe older. And the orientations of some of their maps indicate that they are older. And they were, we are told, pyramidal temples of initiation, not just tombs of the pharaohs. We have a very degenerate view of what they really were. So in those days, inheriting the Atlantean wisdom and 60, 70,000 years ago, and maybe older, there was accuracy. Ancient Egyptian days. The average reader would just think, well, okay, ancient Egypt, that's Egypt, that's 3,000, 4,000 years ago. But I do believe Pastor DK points to something still older. Anything now possible along these lines can only be regarded as approximate. So even in our vaunted astrological study, with all of its intricate mathematics now computerized, it's still just an approximation because we don't have really the point at which to stand, which is a truly stable point. Just as we look at the various pitches in music, we don't have the true A. And with the true A, the true frequency of every other note. We have A440. Well, it's arbitrary. We tune to that. My colleague and harmonologist, shall I call him that, Harold Moses, he tells me that, knows a great deal about harmony, tells me that in Bach's day, the A was 416 vibrations per second, not 440 at all, and that it was just about a whole semitone lower. So what is the true A? What is the true point on which to stand? What is any true note or frequency? So the position, condition in music is analogous to that in astrology. We just don't have the fixed points from which to reckon. We do have, however, the vernal equinox, but it's still very relative against the background of the stars. We don't know how wide or how many degrees relative to Earth measurement a constellation is. The constellation Scorpio seems to take up very little degree space, what, 8 degrees, 10 degrees, something like that. The constellation Virgo seems to take up about 40 degrees. How wide are the true constellations? Is each of their areas of influence truly 30 degrees, and can that be measured along the ecliptic, the apparent path of the sun around the Earth, caused by the Earth's path around the sun? Is it really 30 degrees, or do constellations have varying spans of influence? Anyway, we sometimes think we are dealing with accuracy, but DK tells us, no, it's just an approximation. And has not been possible. Accuracy has not been possible since ancient Egyptian days. And therefore, certainty in analysis, prediction, and interpretation is not possible. Now, this must be really upsetting to the average astrologer. So many resisted DK's presentation. My colleague Keith Bailey tells me that even Dane Rudyar, who was a good friend of Alice Bailey, and he dedicated his big book, Astrology of Personality, to her, that even he resisted DK's presentation. It was so maybe disorganizing of the even advanced views of astrology at that time. But I do note, you know, having read the Astrology of Personality 40 years ago, yes, 40 years ago and more, I noticed that he did incorporate what DK had said in his esoteric astrology book in his Astrology of Personality. But when I went to visit him in person, I visited I consider the two greatest astrologers of the late 20th century, you know, Mark Edmund Jones. I had a reading by him. He told me not to get into occultism. Is it good or bad that I didn't listen? Anyway, I visited Dane Rudyar, and I said, well, what do you think of Alice Bailey astrology? What do you think of the Tibetan's astrology? And he said, and it still rings in my ears, it's not astrology as I know it. And I was surprised, really surprised. But apparently DK tried to give this astrology out to various people who were accomplished in the field, and it was more or less rejected or improperly assimilated or incompletely assimilated. They did not really try to make an effective link between what he was saying and what they were doing and what they thought they knew. That's a tough link to make sometimes. So it's taken a while for this type of astrology to make its way into the thoughts of serious astrologers. My colleague David Keston says that most astrologers who do adopt something of the DK method, they just slap the new rulerships onto what is already there, and they don't really profoundly understand the meaning of these rulerships in esoteric terms. It takes a while to really integrate a whole new organum of thought, organon of thought, into the thoughts one entertains and uses in one's profession. So certainty of analysis and prediction and interpretation is not possible. So when we say we can interpret particular periods of time when things are likely to happen, approximately so. And by the effort to be overly exact, we may force ourselves into error. It's probably better to counsel an individual that during a particular larger period of time, this tendency exists, rather than try to pinpoint the day on which this aspect will be exactly effective. So many factors come into play as the general energies are adapted to the specific microcosmic situation of the individual. This whole subject is one of the greatest obscurity and quite incomprehensible to the average astrologer and certainly to the average student, and presumably the average student of spiritual things knows even less about astrology than the average astrologer. So there's still a gulf. Back in the 30s was a big gulf, and hopefully work by the group of astrologers I have mentioned, and there are others that I don't know, and work in these commentaries will help bring these systems of thought closer together, and as astrologers learn more about the true spiritual development of a human being, they will be able to apply astrology to those developmental phases. That's the problem, that the average astrologer, even the progressive one who knows something about the soul, doesn't know about the occult developmental phases through which people are moving, and therefore cannot really apply the new rulerships to those phases. They will end up applying the new rulerships to ordinary life, where they don't really count. Okay, I would remind you, however, that several times in the great life cycle of the Earth, there have been changing pole stars, and that our present pole star has not always held that position, and this science itself recognizes. So here we're dealing with the continuous gyration of the pole from, well, I call it from right to left. It's kind of like a clockwise gyration, whereas the rotation and revolution are from left to right. But it all depends on your perspective, from what view you are seeing this. So I am assuming that the constant gyration of the pole, completed about every 25,000 years, or our normal figures would say 25,920 years. I guess what we have to do is multiply 2160. My goodness, where is that calculator when you really want it? But you multiply 2160. There it is. 2160 to 160, which is the accepted age, an equinox period, a precessional age, a normal precessional age. You multiply that times 12, and you get 25,920 years. But DK rounds that off, and he calls it 25,000 years, and in doing so, he may be more accurate than this specific 25,920-year period. Anyway, it's a great Platonic age, and it's caused by the gyration of the Earth's axis, one complete cycle of gyration. But I'm assuming that that cycle of gyration is different from this cycle of reorientation of the Earth's axis in terms of verticality, horizontality, verticality and horizontality. And that's a different movement altogether and has occurred only 3.5 times. Probably, I wonder if it corresponds with rounds, because we've had 3.5 rounds. 3.5 times in the history of our particular physical planet, so the Egyptian priests told Herodotus. Two different types of movement. You have to be really an esoteric astronomer to be the most accurate type of esoteric astrologer, and that we are not. There is esoteric astronomy. It does exist, but again, just the ABCs. So we have to approach with humility, knowing how little we do know, but offering what we do know to those who want to know more, so at least certain overly specific ideas are corrected, because it's possible to be so concrete about certain ideas which are erroneous thoughts, as to throw off our entire effort. We concentrate upon specific illusions, taking them for the truth. Whereas if we had a more general perspective of what actually was, we would be closer to the truth. We'd have to sacrifice the assurance we get when we grab onto some specificity. But that sacrifice would be worth it in terms of actual truth content reaching our consciousness. So we're in an area of incomprehensibility, probably to most of us. And he does remind us that several times in the great life cycle of the Earth there have been changing pole stars. Well, I imagine several times, maybe many times, although it is also possible for a pole star to become that through this type of movement. Is it called nutation? I'm remembering Charles Jane telling me about this back and forth dance of the planet, but I don't think he anticipated or suggested that it could possibly continue all the way down to the horizontal and even down to the antipodes, down to the reverse pole, or that there would be a physical reversal of the poles. So many things in astronomy, our particular astronomy has been observing things for a very small time compared to the ancient Chaldeans. I'm sure astrology was in a much better shape, according to HBB, 400,000 years ago, when it was a Chaldean type of astronomy and astrology. But we think that they were more primitive than we and knew far less, and that our astronomy is the best that has ever emerged. Well, maybe in certain respects it is, but in terms of the major cycles of our planet, probably not. So science itself recognizes the change of pole stars. And, you know, it's the word several that confuses me a little bit, because these gyrations are constant. And one Platonic age of 25,000 or 25,920, one comes after another, and they do not stop. We are now entering, in that sense, within either now or within a few centuries, the great Aquarian age of some 25,000 years. That's caused by the gyration clockwise of the Earth's axis. And every time there is a gyration, there's a certain circle in the heavens which is described by the North Pole as it changes its position. And there will be a pointing towards a certain star in that circle. And that star will, for a time, be our pole star. Right now, we are pointing quite closely to Polaris, but we're leaving it. Now, just imagine, if the angle of the Earth tilted, and yet the gyration continued, a different circle would be described in the heavens, and with it, a different star. A different series of stars would become our pole stars. So we have no idea, you know, when there is this reputed reorientation of direction of the Earth's axis, whether it is a continuous movement or whether it occurs in rapid, relatively rapid and willed movements by the planetary logos at certain times that he decides. We don't know that. Because as far as we know, this 23 plus degrees has been operative. The inclination of the Earth's axis has been operative for a long time. And modern science would say forever. But not according to occultism. And this still remains to be proved scientifically, at least when it comes to the gyration of the Earth's axis, top-like, and the circle described, and the stars encountered within that circle of some 23 plus degrees, science does recognize this. As for the other implications, the other assertions of astronomical occultism, no, it doesn't. At each of these great shifts in the Earth's axis, and now we're back to this vertical horizontal shift, there has been upheaval, confusion, cataclysm, preceding reconstruction, stabilization, and relative quiet, and we are in this period. Now you almost wonder, as a matter of fact, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? If the Earth is experienced now its fourth initiation of a certain type, described on page 384 of Cosmic Fire. And there have been three such reorientations, according to the Egyptian priests. Then, every such reorientation is part of the initiation of our planetary logos. Not the cosmic series of initiations necessarily, because even the second cosmic lies ahead for us, but the fourth in a series of lesser initiations. Perhaps there is a way, however, in which the cosmic initiations overlay on the series of seven that we may be talking about. For instance, that second great initiation, cosmic initiation, will it overlay on this fourth, or will it overlay on the fifth such initiation, which might be occurring more at the time of the planetary judgment day? There are two series, and maybe they blend in some way, but it's not a one-to-one correspondence, obviously, because we are now experiencing the fourth in a particular type of series of initiations, and we have not yet experienced the second cosmically, so there's not a one-to-one correspondence between the members of these series. We are in a period of upheaval, confusion, cataclysm. We're, expecting the earthquakes in California. He talks about all of the geophysical upheavals that will be in the next 1,000 years, not limited to California. Edgar Cayce, I think, speaks of the California islands in the future. That tells us something about potential upheaval, the breaking apart of land masses. And there will be reconstruction, stabilization, and relative quiet. Well, some of the relative quiet is predicted already, because, with following the Great Armageddon War, where the Christ will reappear, Satan, the lower vehicles, will be bound for 1,000 years. A symbolic term, but it means a relative period of quiet and of peace. Peace will supervene. But any peace will be disturbed, and any period of cataclysm will be ended and lead towards greater tranquility. Right now, we're in the difficult period of cataclysm. Of these macrocosmic events, there are similar microcosmic correspondences in the lives of both humanity and individual man. So, let's say that when we pass through initiations, we are undergoing a reorientation, not necessarily of our axis, but of our consciousness and our energy system. So many people now, the correspondence of humanity coming towards its first initiation and the Christ reappearing, which will be the signal that humanity has taken it, that lower correspondence is corresponding to the higher disturbances. This great fourth initiation through which our planetary logos is passing has a correspondence in the first initiation through which humanity as a whole, in certain numbers, will be passing. A time of disturbance in general, and the initiate has to be initiate before initiated, so we go through this disturbance, we stabilize within our powers a certain type of consciousness, which is initiatory in rank, and then, by the rod of initiation, that humanly engineered stabilization is further confirmed and stabilized. So we can expect the application of a rod of initiation to our planetary logos, just the way the Syrian Lord has a certain rod of initiation which confers an achieved initiatory state, or stabilizes an achieved initiatory state upon our solar logos. So all the things in the lower worlds are reflecting greater dynamics in the higher, and everything's in crisis now. Beyond our solar system, we cannot say, but there's every reason to believe that our solar logos is passing through a type of lesser fourth initiation, though its third cosmic initiation lies ahead. Our planetary logos passing through a lesser type of fourth initiation, though its second cosmic initiation lies ahead. And humanity, accordingly, coming to its first in a series of five customary initiations. Humanity is still an aspirant, or maybe somewhat of a disciple to a degree, and not all human beings will take the first initiation, but a certain proportion will. And all of these dynamic, disturbing events are somehow correlated with each other. So it's not just, you know, what I, the poor individual, am passing through. What is my country passing through? What is humanity passing through? What is our globe and our planetary chain passing through? And our scheme as a whole. What is the solar logos and his various planetary chakra schemes passing through? They're all correlated. We could probably go on and, if we had the capacity, look at developments within that constellation we call the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. What is that great being passing through? I wouldn't be surprised if within the one about whom naught may be said, our local superconstellational logos, something big is happening involving our local constellation, of which our sun is a heart center, and on down. Hence the present world crisis. Though precipitated by human error and sinfulness, by past karma and emerging idealism, responsive to the development of the intellect and the appearance of the intuition, is basically the result of much greater and vaster combinations of force currents in macrocosmic relations. And the Tibetan is saying just what I said, only in a better way. Watch the higher correspondences to whatever we may be passing through, and notice that there will be changes, big changes. There will be upheavals, but do they have to be as tortured as the upheaval on our planet? Maybe not. Because the greater beings passing through the transitions, they know something. But we are still so ignorant. We are ignorant and we produce error. We are ignorant and we produce sin. And we have past karma that has to be expiated. So because we are relatively low in our consciousness, we do not make our transition, as difficult as it may be, in an intelligent manner. We blunder through it. And that's what we've been doing with these wars. Idealism is emerging, and idealism is emerging because the intellect is growing and the intuition is appearing. This tells us something important about the emergence of idealism. Here we have something important about the emergence of idealism. Well, we live in troubled times. We live in interesting times, as the Chinese say. And we have so much opportunity because of it. If we can achieve spiritual stability in the midst of the storm. You know how the second ray works generally? It's like the eye of the storm, the calm in the very center of the storm. We have to adopt this second ray attitude of calmness in the midst of all of this inevitable change. And astrology can help us do that. So at least by reading this section, we understand that we don't want to pass the buck here, but we are not thoroughly responsible through all the upheaval and pressures that seem to be affecting our lives at this time. And the Shambhala impacts, think of it. Maybe there was one in Lemurian times. It caused the destruction of that aggregate of continents and those root races, by and large. There was a Shambhala impact in Atlantean times, and the Great Flood, I suppose, is an example of that. There were a number of floods, but the Great One pretty well wiped out a whole series of adversaries to the good law. Then a long wait through the fifth root race, until the fifth period of the fifth root race, in which period there was an impact in 1825. Some question about whether there was another one, or certainly there was a strong influence in the early part of the 20th century leading to the wars. But then specifically in 1975, and then, see, there have been 150 years between the list of Shambhala impacts of 1825 and 1975, 150 years then, just 25 years later, the year 2000. And are we to expect a Shambhala impact in the year 2025? Certainly at the Great Conclave, Shambhala will be active. We don't know. DK has not given us that information, but what a crescendo of impacts we're having. So the opportunities are tremendous to link the inner part of man with the outer, and through esoteric astrology, possibly to do so in an intelligent manner. That's what we want to do. Not just blunder through our lives, but to develop a whole science of living through accessing practical esotericism. And much of the knowledge of this will come from a knowledge of esoteric astrology in its relation to esoteric psychology, esoteric healing, esoteric education, and the whole theme of initiation. We want to be an altogether more illumined human race. Now we're entering the fifth kingdom, those of us who are in process of initiation, and that's the kingdom of illumination. And the number five, that ray is the most luminous of all the ray lords. So greater light is coming to the mind, and in this Aquarian age, the fifth ray will be very, very powerful, bringing illumination. Just imagine how it will be in the second and third decanates of the Aquarian age, each lasting some 720 years, according to the 2160 span for the precessional age. Just imagine how it will be, because Mercury will rule one of those decanates and Venus another, and they are both planets of illumination. They both have a strong, strong fifth ray. Maybe the fifth ray of Mercury being even stronger and higher than that of Venus. So we are entering into an age of illumination, but it has to be illumination along with the quality of love, because the soul, the love energy of the soul, the second aspect, must guide intelligence. Otherwise, we will have intelligence used for selfish purposes by the material and mental magicians of the seventh ray age, and that will be a disaster. We are heading into great, great potentials. And Master DK, as a designated messenger, there are others, but you know, he's one of the really strong ones, a designated messenger of hierarchy, is revealing to us our potentials. And they are unimaginable to most people who are locked into certain thought forms that they adhere to out of fear. We have to break up the attractiveness of those thought forms by showing that they do not adhere to pure reason. They're not reasonable, given in the light of certain larger axioms and assumptions. Now, whether people want to live the reasonable life or whether they want to reject that and simply adhere out of fear to what gives them comfort, that remains to be seen, and humanity is still in the balances. So we have learned, as above, so below, you know. The upheavals above are reflected in those below, and all things are changing, at least in our local cosmos system. As above, so below. The great hermetic axiom. Briefly, it might be said that the following cosmic and systemic causes are responsible for the present world crisis and the present difficult world situation. Remember, that was just going into the Second World War, the climax of this war that lasted some 31 years, from 1914 to 1945. He refers to it as one great war in two phases, but it was not yet raging to the full extent when this was written. As a matter of fact, probably when some of this was written, the possibility of averting that war still existed from the important year 1936. So a welling up of magnetic force on Sirius, magnetic force, which produces effects upon our solar system and particularly upon the Earth via the hierarchy. Well, Earth is strangely very related to Sirius, a great cosmic logos, or a logos of a star in cosmos, and our tiny little Earth, but still related. And hierarchy is particularly the representation of Sirius on Earth. The our Great White Lodge is the representative of a much vaster Great White Lodge, or even a Blue Lodge on Sirius. It's magnetic force, and Sirius is the cosmic Christ. We have to, our local cosmic Christ, we have to remember that Sirius is the, let's call it, the local cosmic Christ, and probably has an ultimately a second ray monad. Fifth ray soul, I gather, for Sirius, just like for Venus. And a sixth ray, second ray monad, just as is the case for Venus. Probably, you know, since each one of the planets in our solar system is most allied with a certain local star, Venus is most allied with Sirius. What is the star with which our Earth is most allied? Is it one of the Centauris? Alpha Centauri, perhaps? I wonder. These things will be revealed. So, what's causing the present world crisis? Well, you know, Sirius is the great star of initiation. Initiation, we have determined, occurs during periods of upheaval, or perhaps because the initiation is about to occur, the upheaval occurs. So the great changes in the Earth's axis are, in a way, correspondences of initiatory periods. Sirius sponsors initiation in our solar system and on our planet, reflected by our Great White Lodge, Great White Brotherhood. And so Sirius is involved because, you know, perfection calls imperfection to the surface. That's one of the laws of healing, the ninth law, I think. And our solar logos has not achieved what the logos of Sirius has achieved, not by any means. The logos of Sirius is cosmically mentally polarized. Not so for our solar logos. He's still working through it. There is, as I've often said, a kind of correspondence between these following. As Sirius is to our solar logos, Sol, Helios. So Venus is to the Earth. So the soul is to the personality. So Sirius is the cause. And it's magnetic force. Second, when we're dealing with first ray, of course, magnetism comes immediately to mind, but usually and generally, it's considered a second ray dynamic. Radiation is considered related to the first ray. The ultimate cause of magnetism is the first ray, and DK is at pains to explain that somehow, mysteriously, the first ray is really correlated with magnetism even more than the second ray. But for practical purposes, it's first ray radiation, second ray magnetism. And Sirius is not a first ray source, though it is so dominant that it plays the role of the first ray to our solar system. A shift in the Earth's polarity due to a great cosmic center, we're not being told which, this powerfully affects the Earth's orientation, actually probably physical orientation. And is responsible for the present earthquakes. Uranus will be involved, the planet of earthquakes. So somehow our Earth, Uranus, and this great cosmic center would be connected. And for the volcanic eruptions, the Agni-Chaitanic activity, and many earthquakes during the past 150 years, taking us back to 1780, in that period. Was there not a great earthquake in Lisbon about which Voltaire wrote in Candide? Was that 1750-something, 1756, something like that? Anyway, that period, and for the next 1,000 years, many ahead. Now, the Earth's polarity, the shift from positive to negative, is not a spatial pole shift. It's a shift of polarity with the north or the south becoming respectively positive or negative at different occasions. I don't think he's talking about that. A great cosmic center. Well, how great? Is it Sirius? There's a stronger and stronger relation, and Sirius is considered a cosmic being, or is it, in fact, constellational? He's not saying. Could it be Pleiadian? The Pleiades are actually a greater center than Sirius is. There's some 800 stars out there, all clustered together. Maybe it's 1,000. Maybe it's a reflection of the 1,000-petaled lotus of the one about whom naught may be said. So, we have the Pleiades and the Zodiac representing the heart in the head center, heart in the head center of the one about whom not to be said. Maybe it's the Pleiades. Anyway, we don't know. But we do know that a cosmic center is involved in causing these very tangible and dramatic events on Earth, these shake-ups, you might say. Shake-ups on our Earth. So nothing is happening strictly because something moves on the Earth. The cause of it is deeper and higher. And we will learn about these things when we learn the esoteric astronomy. So, you know, our period of upheaval through which we are passing, the magnetic upwelling of force on Sirius, and a shift of the Earth's polarity, that can conceal a lot of possibility. Earth is in a masculine incarnation at the moment, our planetary logos is, that is, and Venus in a feminine incarnation. These are polarities. And we have to wonder whether that is involved. Polarity covers a multitude of possibilities. But maybe it has something to do with the degree to which the Earth as a whole can be receptive to higher currents. Because we want the Earth to be able to absorb and incorporate energies which it previously rejected. Our solar logos rejects certain first ray energies so it can concentrate on the development of the second ray. But maybe it's come time now for the Earth to receive, through repolarization, certain energies. Maybe it can be negative to certain positive energies where it's been positive before and rejecting. And this may work out physically in the reorientation of the Earth's axis. Well, what I'm going to do now is say, okay, this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 1112, B, page something, page 409. and beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure. That's Burning Ground. Whoop. Okay. One 12, C, page 409. Yes, he's dealing with in this review some very big issues, which will help us place in context this science of triangles with all of its cosmic, systemic, and planetary and intraplanetary implications. Again, he's giving us the big picture. Now, the masters are the masters of, or at least they are privy to and understand the great science of cycles, which can be gathered through all knowledge on the atmic plane. And I am, yes, looking for here this chart that Keith and the created for the AUM group. We find all knowledge right up here on the third level of the cosmic, of the atmic plane, systemic atmic plane. The masters have an atmic component, very strong, to their development, and there is where the science of cycles can be understood. We don't understand that yet, not by any means. And DK is writing about things that can be gained or understood from the perspective of one who has that type of atmic knowledge. It pertains to a master of the wisdom because it's five subplanes up from the lowest aspect of the atmic plane, whereas he tells us the still higher subplanes have qualities that are not given, and they pertain to stages of development still greater than that of the master, probably stages of development related to the Chohanship of the sixth degree and of the seventh degree.